I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma.
Good day, Vashon, and welcome to the Cats and Jammer Follies, a show about travel. Real, true travel with all the beauty and ugly life has to offer. During these COVID-19 times, when we can't travel at all, I've asked a bunch of my friends, a bunch of different people, friends, some more than not, to share some of their travel stories with me. And today we have the notorious Michael Whitmore, musician, writer, fast talker, great friend, and of course a traveler. And today, he's going to tell us a tale from Napoli, Napoli or Naples, combination of Napoli, which is an excerpt from his book, The Great Italian City, Living Always in the Shadows of Mount Vesuvio. It is considered by many to be a little rough around the edges, as many port cities are, but it is also filled with historic beauty, beautiful people, stunning coastline, close to Pompeii, La Camorra, the beauty of the Amalfi Coast, limoncello from Sorrento, known for its lemons, and of course, the best pizza in the world. I myself have spent a fair amount of time in Naples. My sister used to be an au pair there. So I do know the craziness that can ensue. And Michael has been working on a novel for a number of years.
Yep.
Will you tell us a little bit about it?
It's a novel about a musician. It's called Over Under Sideways Down, at least at this point. It's about a musician at the end of his road, and it entails two road trips, one here on the West Coast and one in Italy. Mm-hmm. And every other chapter is about either one of those things. And
when were you there? When is this taken?
A lot of the stories in the novel, fictionalized version of it, I was there, I think 10 or 11 years ago. We were there for 3 weeks. I was in a band called Listing Ship, and it was fun. The best thing about it, though, was just the food.
Oh, incredible food.
Every club, every nightclub we played at, they had a chef on the premises. It was astounding. And we'd have these 5-course meals before we played, sometimes, which was grueling when you get up on stage. You've been eating for 3 hours and... But it was a great trip, and we never talked about the music. We always talked about the food. The food was absolutely everywhere we went.
Yeah.
There was one place outside of Milan that it was an odd little. We played. It wasn't a club. It was actually like a rec hall or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of people showed up to see us play. But they took us to this pizzeria, and I just thought, oh, it's just pizza. No, it was the most phenomenal.
It's never just pizza.
It was the most phenomenal pizza I ever had. One of my bandmates, she ordered like a 4-cheese pizza, and we all got more exotic things. And she said, why did I get the 4-cheese pizza? We switched slices, and it was amazing. It was a religious experience.
Wow.
So it was 3 weeks we just ate like kings.
When you were in Italy, did you have a chance at all to explore the Italian music scene at all?
We did a little bit, but we didn't get digged. We had friends of friends.
Mm-hmm.
All our gear got lost on flight over. So we had to borrow.
Which
gear.
You're going to talk about.
Well, I'm going to talk about
part of the story.
But we didn't really, not much.
I can tell you when I lived in Milan, this is a long time ago, but when I lived there, there used to be, people would take advantage very much of abandoned buildings, squats, and they were called casa occupati. And there were tons of young kids and punk rock shows and super warm, cheap beer. And it was pretty phenomenal to be there during that time.
Yeah.
There was a really famous one in Milan called Leoncavallo, which is where we would hang out tons. And I got to see tons of great shows there.
We played one place in Rome that was definitely that kind of place.
That sort of vibe.
It was completely bombed out, emptied, but this art collective had taken it over.
Yeah. There's a lot of places they do that in Europe. I've been to them in Berlin.
Berlin especially.
Amsterdam.
Same. Yes.
Had a stronghold like that. And isn't that the basis of that town in Denmark called Christian.
Don't they have a music festival there?
Yeah. Well, I think that's how it got started, though, is that it was a bunch of abandoned buildings, and then all these artists took it over with, you know, many musicians.
Yeah, I remember. I haven't been in Berlin in forever, but we stayed in the Kreuzberg district.
Which would have been the cool place to be.
It was funny. Sure. We were in Amsterdam, and someone said, "Oh, you should go to this one club in Kreuzberg." We said, "Okay, we'll go there." We get to Berlin. We go to stay at our friend's house, who are American expats, and we told them about a club, and they said, "That place? They recommended you go to that place?" I said, "Yeah. Where is it?" She said, "It's the first floor of our building." And she said,
"Well, that's convenient. You can literally stumble up the stairs."
And she said there was nothing special at all. But anyway, but yeah, every time I've gone to Europe, I've been, I think, 7 or 8 times. Mm-hmm. I always have come across those weird performance spaces you'll find that often here in the States.
Not in the same way.
There was a place like that in New York called ABC No Rio, which we played a couple of times. It was sort of like that, but it doesn't have the same, you know.
There was I know what you're talking about. There was a place like that in Chicago. It was called Hell House, and it was, now the neighborhood, of course, is super fancy. In fact, the neighborhood where Leoncavallo was in Milan is also super fancy.
Right.
But, you know, this is obviously a long time ago, but the one in Chicago, it was just super punk rock, super derelict, where, I don't know, probably 10 kids live there. You know, I say kids, but they're like, you know, early 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
And tons of just fun music coming out, artistic things. But I imagine with the amount of dirty dishes, probably a good amount of botulism, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the place in Rome I talked about that we played, it was the last of our gig, and it was the only place where the food was just a big bowl of pasta, and it was nothing special, and
which is surprising coming out of Rome, because it's such an amazing food city.
Yeah, it was just a lot of artists who didn't know we got around to cooking. Oh, we should feed the band.
Yeah, right.
You know, it was one of those things.
Here's a quick little spaghetti for you.
But anyway,
all right. Well, awesome. Well, what's the title of your book again?
At this point, it's called Over, Under, Sideways, Down.
I love it.
It's just about a musician at the end of his road, just kind of like reining it in, just like seeing...
End of his career, end of his fast lifestyle.
And taking responsibility for something that was awful that happened in his life. So.
Okay, so. And you'll expel on that later.
I'll tell you more about that.
Okay, great. After. Okay, all right. Michael Whitmore, take it away.
Okay. 5 considerations. Bungled is a great word. Uzi-toting goons stamping passports at the airport. Not the greeting you'd expect in a beautiful city. Fast cars, faster women will be the death of me. Check that. Naples will be the death of me. And from a distance, jet-lagged is an interesting expression. Yes, bungled is one of those words that even if you don't know its precise definition, just the sound of it, how it trips off your tongue, how it rolls around the roof of your mouth, bungled. You get it. You get the gist of the situation. And just as important, what that situation lacks. The city of marble and the Renaissance, history, myth, cuisine, Sophia Loren, Claudia Cardinale, Gina Lola Brigida, Isabella Rossellini. And all I could think about was Romulus and Remus, and how Romulus beat his brother to death with a shovel. About an hour after landing in Rome, I knew as fact the brain-splattered ghost of Remus was tracking us. As for Romulus, I was sure he was out back somewhere, warming up his home run swing one more time. From the deranged abacus we call his brain, Emmett calculated, what are the odds? I'm terrible at math, so I had no answer. I had nothing, and evidently not even a change of socks. Somewhere along the line, our luggage vanished, every grimy and shiny piece, everything evaporated, vaporized into the infinite. 20 minutes in Rome, and we're already floundering. Somehow, somewhere between the sunny palm tree-lined dystopia we call home, Los Angeles, an airport called the worst in Europe, Rome, every piece of our luggage was raptured into oblivion. Like Amelia Earhart, Jimmy Hoffa, D.B. Cooper, like the Mets in September, like civil liberties. Here's a fact, 2 essential facts that were built into my life. Constant incompetence and a swift decline of momentary competence. My fates are infectious, even here far from home. A good chunk of travel requires, well, kind of necessitates a spirited dose of fantasy. Rarely these glitches and the pleasant bit of vacation wander the same path, but never in tandem. Travel seldom dons rose-colored glasses, except maybe in a brochure. Reality prefers a swollen purple bruise. There's always some hard-nosed and flexible hitch coming along, settling in like a bad house guest. He eats your good snapshot, drinks up all your good times, and never flushes the toilet. Reality has a knack of reaching down and around your vacation plan, shoving the mood equivalent of live Spanish piranha up your stern cavity. Here's my self-produced holiday brochure, shrunk down to a single quip. Travelers are carrion for scavengers. But there is one good news. Salvation is nigh. Victoria has arrived to rescue us. Our favorite chef and crazy, beautiful feline and best Italian friend one could ever have. Victoria. Victoria from Naples. Oh, Victoria. You could be the girl of my dreams and an entirely different doppelganger version of my life. If I were younger and you're in your league intellectually, and if I could muster one half your wit, if I were taller, thinner, and halfway good-looking, who knows, might have been a good match if I spoke Italian. When she picked us up at the airport, she was wearing a tattered leather skirt, a shrunken turtleneck sweater. Jackie O sunglasses topped her Don't Wake Me shock of multicolored hair. Victoria, the perfect and gorgeous version of a three-day bender. Piling into her car, had the comfort of an old bubble bath, and a tall snifter of brandy. We felt gracious and cheery, almost stoned as we waved adios to the airport, hustling on to the Autostrada del Sol, the A1, the motorway of the sun. As Rome is Italy's heart, and once upon a time the hub of the world, the A1 is the spinal cord of the Italian highway system. By the time we flew out of Italy a couple of weeks later, we'd have driven every mile of that road from its northernmost tip in Milan to its rosy-cheeked bottom in Naples, Vittoria's home. What's sexier, fast cars, faster women, or a GPS tonguing my ears? The first mile traveling the A1 South, holy NASCAR Jesus, how many Italian drivers seem to be possessed by the souls of ancient charioteers, dead and buried yet still galloping, clanging bloody spiked wheel against gore-spiked hub, entertaining long-gone emperors doused in unguents of hog's lard and fenugreek, aura sprinkled in their silky golden robes. Centuries of fat monarchs conducting gore boy action, manhood in hand. Bring on the Christians, release the lion, thumbs up, thumbs down. Where is my 17th concubine? More gladiators, more wine, more passum, and I mean now. Every tin can of a car sprinting by us smacked around fate like an old muddy boot. Nobody had any intention of ever decelerating, stop sign or no stop sign. Not on your life, not in this life. Who needs brakes? Who needs brakes when Mercury is at the reins, gripping the white lines, plunging down a cutthroat curve, grappling with something as inconsequential as eternity? But what captivated me more, even as we weaved through the countless dark tunnels, every dashboard from every airborne Fiat and Alfa Romeo shone a spicy indigo glow, downright sci-fi. It was those Italian-voiced GPS devices guiding people around all those scrunched back roads, and everybody had one. Talk about seduction. Is it because I'm in sexy Italy, racing down a sexy Italian highway? What in Italy isn't sexy as hell? Sooner or later, I knew I'd be smitten by that feminine GPS voice, her plastic demands, her naked, automated demeanor. I imagined her mouth pulling syllables, pink-tinted lips parting as her tongue anchored our comings and goings. Oh, slow down, baby, not so fast. And if we get lost, baby, just keep on talking to me in that stilted Italian purr. I don't care where we wind up, who knows, maybe something boundless might transpire, right? And she'd guide me through another dark tunnel on a slick, wet road. And you got that right. Hold on, Casanova. We're hitting this corner hard and fast. After two mesmerizing hours of asphalt whir, interspersed with touches of sleep and quiet, all calm imploded as we pulled off the A1 into Naples. Sweet bastard of mother feral Christ, Naples. We stepped into a crap-sprung springboard of some savage vortex, jacked up to a level of sucking my brains like Hollywood sucks talent, bone dry. Holy mother of God, Manhattan is a lonesome country road compared to Naples' velocity. Untamed and out of control, baffling, electrifying, Naples has to be the crown capital of hysteria. Take me, devour me, I want to be splattered all over this cyclone. Naples will rip the marrow from your every bone. This is hardcore with a capital H. Emmett's first words inside Naples' border. this town is not for pussies. Amen to that, brother. And as dumbfounded as I felt leaning out the large kitchen window in Victoria's apartment, two floors up, overlooking the endless surge of traffic, the city beckoned, calling me, singing a sweet song. Oh, the swan dive into this mad zoo, arms and legs flailing, joy and bedlam just a few screaming feet away. All of it tempted every impudent, bent aspect of my asinine personality. Forget consequences, fear nothing, trust the fate, the hell with the fate. If fate decided to fry my impish ass, let like it's never been deep fried before, so be it. It may have been a long ways from the safe bulwarks of home, but the temptation to burn burned my soul. This was utterly wrong. It was perfect and right. Me clutching, chugging a bottle of red Taurasi wine, please, devouring pizza in a city where pizza was invented, my raison d'etre. Yes, I needed something astonishing to fill my gut, an intangible need for an insatiable appetite. The hell with this pithy, bright-eyed, cautious bit I packed with my toothbrush and underwear. The hell with prudence. Fate, I am ready for my comeuppance, deserved or not, give me my due. I am yours, I yelped, sounding more like a bloodhound on the scent of a rabbit than a man on the verge of bliss. Yes, and amen, absolutely. But oh, you wicked, wicked jet lag. Oh, I wish, I wish, I wish, because there it was, skulking up from the reaches of hell, one heavyweight backhand slapping a dose of fatigue and sick across my ass. Once again ambushed and mugged by fate, battered into putty and submission, too dead to dive in, too toasted to bend off, to fend off the bends. If I could only have bounded out into the street, an idiot unleashed, playing true to my blathering American knack for stupidity. I wanted to get lost, wind up underneath the crush of Naples, dodging Vespas shooting the wrong way down one-way narrow cobblestone streets. It's easy to see how pedestrians wind up as fleshy, bone-splintered speed bumps. And yes, I would volunteer for the position in a heartbeat, and perchance become a better man, a worldlier imp. I wanted this, but as the first day trundled into a second and third, I was leveled by the worst jet lag I have ever known in this nomadic life of mine. And on top of that proverbial crap cake, the most mind-tweaking insomnia I've ever experienced thwacked my worth to no end. An imperceptible but very real 200-pound anvil dangled from my neck. And every so often, and just as I felt some spiritual or physical relief, some phantom would sneak up behind me, smack that anvil with a 3-pound hammer, ping, 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 tripping my tinnitus, tripling my aggravation. This was only the start. My knees were killing me. My back was killing me. Any last remnant of youthful muscle was breaking down, festering right before my eyes. Even my ears were annoyed. Some noisy family of creepy, crawly parasites must have set up household in my inner ear. Remedying this sleeplessness became obsessive, and yes, it kept me up at night. In the middle of the dark, as I lay awake in a tiny spot in Vittoria's apartment, the couch, and nothing happened, nothing at all, waiting, hours of waiting around. Instead of counting sheep, my mind compiled long, dense questionnaires, and then I squandered even more sleep by contemplating the best and most suitable answers. There is no such thing as sleep. It has never existed, a phantom mumbled. That's crazy. I used to sleep. Little slices of death, right? Isn't that what they say? If sleep did exist, it favors only the innocent, or at least someone with a clue. Whitmore, you simply don't qualify. Of course, once in a while, there were some relevant questions plowing through my head, ruining my night. I guess that was a positive sign. Think about something worthwhile, something, anything, even if rash proving to be relevant. Then again, diatribes on which narcotic would lessen this crap isn't answering the great questions of life, liberty, fried food, and cappuccinos. Then again, how much dextrodrine or benzene would it take to get me up and out the front door? How much Oxycontin would it take to ease the pain in my back? Do they still manufacture Quaaludes? Would Quaaludes just be the end of me? How much more Xanax and Vicodin and Valium do I have stashed in my carry-on bag? Which of these packs the greatest, strongest punch? What about wine? How much wine would fix this? In Italy, wine is very, very sexy. Did I mention my knees? You mean your sexy knees? No, Victoria said on the third morning. You really look bad. You can't die in my house. Not good. It can't be cheap sending you home dead. Just cremate me. I do have an empty shoebox, she said. Don't worry, I only look like death. You don't smell good either. How is it I'm the only one wrecked around here? How the hell did that happen? You need rest. Try some whiskey. Whiskey do you good, Victoria predicted, playing Flo Nightingale's proposing remedies. Oh, to be home, I sighed, imagining my wife cooking some homemade preserves. I'm not sure who the hell this is in the kitchen canning fruit, but I'm sure that's her bent over the stove in a tight pair of Levi's. Home! And it comes up from behind me, emerging from the shadow, a narrow hallway up from the shower. My amatory apparition evaporates. But we just got here. Here's my 2 cents worth, cowboy. Get good and drunk, or should Victoria call a priest? I prefer my last rites from an old barista. I didn't have the strength of my to lift my head off my dog-tired folded arms tied to the kitchen table. Well, hell, when do we get to bury you, Whitmore? Thursday, I said.
Senta Megido Faffa, tu vuoi vivere alla moda, ma se bevi whisky e soda, pote sente disturba, tu avallo rock and roll, tu gioco a baseball, ma è sorte pecca a me, chi te li dà la borsetta di mamma, tu vuoi far l'americano, americano, americano. Mazzinati in Italy, senta me non c'è sta niente a fa, ok Napolita, tu vuoi fare l'America, tu vuoi fare l'America, qui si fa la rock and roll, qui si fa la rock and roll, qui si fa la rock and roll, qui si fa la rock and roll.
Michael, thank you so much. Those,
oh, my pleasure.
Your writing is very reminiscent, of course, of beat poetry.
Oh.
I hate to say it because I know that you don't like it, but it's so awesome the way that you deliver it with your stream of consciousness and being crushed under Naples. I mean, just like the imagery is so strong that it's beautiful writing.
Well, hey, man, cool. No, I never think of that as a stream of consciousness. I do ramble. You know, like
yeah,
I always believe that a conversation doesn't go one direction. If it does go one direction, it's boring. You know, I think conversations go many, many places. So
yeah.
In part of this book, I talk about the conversations going on in my head. There's always talking going on in my head. Sometimes I'm involved with it. Sometimes I'm not. And the strange thing is trying to have the conversation with somebody I'm sitting with and not connect with what's going on in my head. I heard recently some people don't have voices in their head. Not voices. I don't have voices. They don't have inner dialogue. A friend of ours.
How can you not have inner dialogue?
You have a friend who has no inner dialogue. He has no idea what we're talking about. And I thought everyone had.
But how would he even be able to have conversations at all?
He's a talker, but he has no inner dialogue. Whereas me, I have constant dialogue in my head.
I have constant inner dialogue.
Yeah,
too
yeah.
much.
Yes.
In fact, I always want to turn it off. But it doesn't happen.
Yes, right.
Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. So I am going to read a very short story that I wrote about Bucharest, just a moment in time caught in Bucharest, and which is also an interesting city in terms of like how you feel when you walk around. Like, it has a crazy energy in the same way that Naples does, although completely different because it's Eastern European, obviously. But here goes. I had a Pilsner in front of me, accompanied by a large fry order. My luggage sat closely into me. I sat alone, waiting for my husband to return. Adam has left this machine gun guarded McDonald's in hopes of finding somewhere to sleep nearby. We arrived into Bucharest a few hours before, after having taken a bus from the airport straight here, trying to catch a train down to Bulgaria. The bus was filled with the good people of the city, and the ride was a real welcoming to Bucharest. I got on, went to the back, and found two seats close enough together. It was crowded, filled with mostly dark-haired people, wearing worn-in clothes with the rich smell of human odor. I look out onto what was once communist-era buildings, centuries of crumbling, families dining in cars, stray dogs circling, derelict parks with posters of puffy-faced men who are running for the next election, salt-and-pepper hair with ruddy cheeks, wide boulevard, and Orthodox churches, all with the hope and intent of what could be beautiful. I very much like to hear the sound of Romanian. It sounds to me like a sort of Italian, very sing-songy, but with words I cannot decipher, but with a romantic cadence. The bus stops, and the public transport controllers unexpectedly come on. I can see they're asking for tickets. We are in the back, so it takes a while. They approach the woman next to us, a stocky body with tight jeans, chunky heels, and olive skin. I can see she has no ticket as a great dispute begins to erupt. Her flowing, curly, dark hair sways from side to side, both from the movement of the bus, also from her emotion. Her olive skin is now red, and tears fall from her chestnut eyes. The controllers are shouting. She is shouting, and others begin to chime in. Maybe she'll get arrested. Maybe she doesn't have money for that fine. I, myself, am beginning to sweat, as I have no ticket or language. I've played this card before as an American. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know where to buy the ticket. Oh, my God. I can buy it now. I'm so sorry. It's a flawed system that many take advantage of, including myself. At this point in life, I have no reason other than the sheer excitement of not knowing what is going to happen or to play the game of a stupid foreigner. I had the money, and at that moment on this bus, I thought, oh, now you're really just an effing idiot. They escorted her off after about 20 minutes of interrogation. They never approached us, and the bus slowly moved into town. We continued on to the train station, where older men wear gray-colored, dusty suits, walk with pride, and gaze at you, perhaps a little too long and a little uncomfortably. By the time I got to the place where I sat and ate fries and drank an enormous beer, where tall, strong men with uniforms graciously promenade with their AK-47s through the station, I was so happy to have that odd familiarity of American fast food and home. We did eventually find a room in a small house turned into a bed and breakfast called Joe's Hotel. It had acrylic sheets from the 1990s with yellow smiley faces and rainbows, oftentimes quite nubbly over years of use. I recognized the pattern from a long time ago. It would have hardly passed for a room to rent in a lot of places, but the bars on the windows of this garden apartment made me feel sort of safe. I turned on the television with its rabbit ears for antenna, sat on the bed, and drank more Pilsner out of a plastic 1-liter bottle, which I would come to realize was the going thing both in Romania and in Bulgaria. It was the beer from the region of Transylvania, malty in that way some Pilsners can be. But I laid there, and I listened to the sing-song of the language, tried to make it out, and all the while watching feet walk by and waiting for morning.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, El Dorado, Larimore.
Thank you so much for joining me today for Cats and Jammers Follies. I'm Megan Hastings with my very special guest, Michael Whitmore.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you. Thank you to Voice of Vashon, and please tune in next week for another travel story show.
I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.